Welcome to our morning show today on WRCO, March 14th. And we have City Administrator Ashley Oliphant here, along with Jason Glassbrenner from Richland Center Tourism. And I guess you've got quite the, you wear a lot of hats, don't you, Jason?
Yep. Actually, Marty's tourism. I'm the economic developer.
Economic, right. Yeah. I always get that wrong. And when Marty's here, I introduce him wrong, too. But good to have you in the studio here.
Yeah, it's
today.
Good to be here this morning, Phil. Thanks for having us on.
There's been a lot of things going on in the city since the last time we had you on.
There are a lot of things, and so Ashley and I kind of talked about what we might cover on the radio today, and you know, one of the things that we wanted to talk about was just some of the recent wins that we've been experiencing as a city through economic development and, of course, through the assistance of the administrator's office. So, you know, one of the big ones, and I think the news might have been out a little bit, is the $2.5 million grant that the city was just awarded. That was a congressional allocation that just got funded, I think, in the last week. It was last week, about midweek, it went through the House of Representatives, and then towards the end of the week, it went through the Senate. So Derek Van Orden, our representative, and Senator Tammy Baldwin are the two offices that we worked with. And so this was a $2.5 million grant to extend infrastructure to serve the new hospital location to the east of town here. So we are really excited about that. There's still a very long process that we have to go through before we'll actually be working the project and receiving dollars and moving dirt there. But again, this is to help assist, you know, the building of roads, putting in of water, sewer, electric, things of that nature.
So that money is just going to be sitting there until you're ready to use it then, in other words? Or how does that work?
Well, it actually, while Congress says it is funded, what they have to do is find the appropriate federal agency to administer the grant now.
Okay.
So that money actually has to find a home, and it could be at the USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, or at United States Department of Economic Development, or the EPA, or, you know, it's going to be some agency that will have oversight of the money. They have to draft their program and figure out what their policy and procedure is going to be before they actually reach out to us and then say, okay, you made it through round one. We know that your project is valid, but here's all the rules you have to follow. And so there's a process yet, and I wouldn't say the money is sitting in an account at the city or anything like that, because it's not, but Congress has approved it. We do expect to receive it, but we believe there could be actually 6 months to a year of time here before we really are seeing actually able to turn in a receipt, let's say, on and receive some of that grant money and for the work that we're doing.
Pretty important that you get some elected officials behind you to help with that project, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I think, Ashley made an announcement to the elected officials that, hey, we had worked on this together, her office, my office, and we blasted that out to the decision makers and the council members, and they're like, yeah, this is a tremendous win, and yeah, they are behind us. They have to, you know, they basically have to say, yeah, this is a valid and good project for you guys to be working on, and I think we've proven that it was, and I think they're super happy. That's what they've communicated anyway.
And in addition to that, we've had tremendous support from Representative Van Orden's office as well as Senator Baldwin's office. So having their support, right, we would not have received this award if not for them being so supportive of the project and seeing the value in it. And as far as we know, this is the first time we've ever received a grant like this or from a program like this. And so it's very encouraging, and it's led us to apply yet again. So Jason and I are currently in the process of submitting another grant, the same program, but doing it again for another project.
Sounds like you had help across the party lines, though, too, for some of these, didn't you?
There was absolutely bipartisan support.
Yeah, that's very good. Well, Ashley, let's since we've got you in the studio, let's talk about a little bit your job description and what you do as a city administrator.
Sure. I think it's important to recognize that this role now has been in place for about 2 years, and it was new. And so there's been a lot of navigating through what it should look like and what it should be. When I was hired, It was with two main priorities, which I believe mayoral candidate Karen Tepley mentioned yesterday on your program, but that was budget and personnel. And so although those are two words, those are very big areas and they can encompass a lot. But, you know, it's been my focus to make sure that we have the right people in the right positions, to make sure that our employees have the tools that they need, and that between employees and elected officials, we understand how to work with one another, and then work across departments. So often, especially historically, government has been siloed or segregated and really isolated, and so everybody is working independent of one another and not recognizing how, just like in the case of the grant, we need to be collaborating, we need to have teamwork. So trying to change the culture a little bit and make sure that we are accessing all of the skills and abilities that we have available to us in our team, in our resources, and using them to work together so that way we can maximize opportunities and potential. And an example of that would be through our budget process. So it's a very, very extensive process. It really starts with department heads, where they're projecting their needs, their services, any changes to services, or how do we maintain the level of services that we have. And so really going through their department level budgets and then doing a review with me and looking at what our future projects are going to look like and how do we incorporate that in and make sure we're providing the same or greater level of services, executing the initiatives of our council and other things that come up that we don't always have a crystal ball to foresee. So it's a very, like I said, a very long process. There's a lot of review. There's a lot of collaboration with that. We have one pool of money that everybody draws from. So we have to be very careful in how we utilize the finite resources. And really the best way to do that is to not compete, but work together and put what's in the best interest of the city first.
That's how we move forward, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Work together. So what's the next step of the grant that we talked about with Jason? What comes next then?
Well, for the grant that we're currently working on, one grant, the second iteration of this, and so we will be submitting the application by the end of next week. But as far as the grant we've been awarded, we're waiting. We're waiting to hear what committee does that end up in, and what sort of rules or requirements do we have to meet for that. And then as soon as we find that out, we'll be moving along.
Is it tough to get through all the legal E's and the do's and the don'ts and what you can and cannot do?
Well, you know, I think, yes, it's a reason why perhaps some places don't pursue grants, because there are a lot of layers, there's a lot of rules, there's a lot of regulations, and sometimes it makes it difficult to utilize grants for the projects or for the initiatives we might have. So there can be cause for some to not pursue grants because of that.
Yeah, I can believe that, because it's time consuming and, you know, sometimes you just don't have enough hours in the day to put all those things together,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yes.
Well, Jason, you talked about some wins. That's one of them. Or some other ones you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, another one that we that just occurred at the last council meeting, which was March 5th, I believe was the date of that, is we had two offers on a lot that the city owns at 291 North Jefferson Street. So I've talked about this program again, but I enjoy talking about it because I think it represents an awesome collaboration between the county and the city. So when I first started in economic development, you know, I talked to some of the county board members, the county board chair. At that point, it was Administrator Langreck. And we talked about creating a program where if there was a tax delinquent blighted property that came up for sale that the county took because of back taxes, then could we create a program where the county would assist by basically needing to write off the taxes due, selling it to the city for a dollar. The city invests by demolishing a blighted property and then allows my office to work on marketing and trying to get a new structure built on a lot. So I'm really happy to say that at the last council meeting, we had, again, two offers. They chose to accept an offer on the lot at 291 North Jefferson Street, and the developer there has agreed again to sign a performance guarantee, and what we expect will happen there is we'll have a new duplex on that lot. So housing, infill housing, you know, the removal of some properties that are very blighted and make it really tough on the neighbors' property valuations, you know, so that's a great win, and you know, I would expect that within a year, year and a half, that we'll have another structure there ready to be occupied.
That's awesome. How about occupants? Any idea how many we're talking about then?
Well, that's a duplex, so that would be probably up to two families, you know. Duplex means two living units, and so yeah, we would expect or hope that it would be a family, although individuals could live there too, or maybe someone that's retired that wants to downsize and doesn't want to do as much maintenance on their own property. They might be a candidate to move in there. So, but it would be two living units.
You have to jump through some hoops too when you're selling that property, as you mentioned, kind of figuring out the land and, you know, I would imagine samples of soil and different things like that too.
In that particular case, it's because it's a residential lot, those requirements aren't as stringent, I guess you would say, but we wanted to make sure in the demolition of the house that the property is in good condition and that there wasn't, let's say, an old fuel oil tank buried or something like that. So we handled all of that in the demolition process of the home and make sure that when the home is raised, that the basement, let's say, all of the rocks and the concrete are removed, the old foundation is removed, and that their soil's put in and compacted so that when a new developer comes in, it's ready to go. So that was part of the city's responsibility, you know, in this deal and this partnership between the county and the city.
Also a talk of a new hotel possibly coming in sometime around the future somewhere?
Yeah, we've been working on that. I think I mentioned that a little bit in the last time that I was on, and the council has taken steps to secure property in the downtown area where we have had a conceptual plan done. That was done through an EPA service, Environmental Protection Agency service, where the city received roughly $100,000 of in-kind work from the EPA and associated consultants. And they did a conceptual plan of the downtown area on a roughly a block and a quarter. And in that block and a quarter, the EPA found through some market research and surveys in the community, things like that, that they believe that a hotel would be a good fit. So we've got concept. We don't have anyone at this point that's like ready to start tomorrow. And there are things that we have to do to complete the transaction with the current landowners. We're trying to do that as expediently as possible, but it does take a little bit of time sometimes when you're working inside of government. So progress, and hopefully we will have a couple of great projects developed there.
And we talked last time about Panorama Estates too, but it sounds like that's moving forward too, right?
Panorama continues to move forward. We're still in a process there where we've got to get that final development agreement drafted. And so I know our city attorney is working hard on that, and we hope to have that completed for the next council meeting so that the council could actually, you know, say, sign off on that development agreement. So what they've done to this point is agree in principle to a financial package to help support the construction of buildings 2 and 3. And now what we're doing is making sure that conceptual financial package that was agreed to is written in legal terms and can be signed off. So it's city attorney, the developer's attorney, and then the council has the final, yes, let's go, this is good.
Well, we have you both in the studio, too. We kind of wanted to talk about the decision tree and how all that works, Ashley, and, you know, with from concept, ideas and things like that. How does that all come about there, and how do you work together?
Well, this decision tree is something that Jason put together, and it's a really simple way to communicate what the considerations are that our elected people must make. And so anytime there's a request for governmental involvement, we have to tread cautiously. It's taxpayer dollars. It's not our own money. And so Jason has established a really nice decision tree to walk folks through that. And I'll let you, Jason, if you'd like to go through those steps.
Well, we I like to describe it in four main questions that decision makers have to ponder, and they have to seriously ponder them. So for example, in the wins that we had there, we just don't, you know, say, hey, Panorama Estates is requesting, I think it was roughly 5.4, I think was the number, 5.4 million for development incentive. We don't just say, oh, yeah, let's do that. There's a lot that has to go on, and we want to make sure that as professional staff, we're advising the decision makers. It's not their everyday life, so we want to make sure we're providing good questions and helping them move through a decision-making tree to arrive at a decision that they believe is responsible to all the constituents. So question number one is, do your constituents want the development that is being proposed? And so we can, you can probably imagine, and I'm sure you hear in your day-to-day walk, and we hear it in our day-to-day walk, there's a lot of things that the constituents and the people of Richland Center want, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we want this, we want that. And those are fine. That's great. It's good that the community can express themselves. And that's one level that the decision makers have to consider, right? The second level then is what is being asked for, the development being asked for, is it actually needed? That's a totally different question, right? In community development, we talk about felt needs versus real needs. You know, I feel that I want an ice cream cone, but do I really need the ice cream cone? Like, you can probably look at me and say, no, the guy doesn't, you know?
A want or a need. Yeah, I understand that.
So is the development needed? And so there's a second set of questions that has to be gone through, and we can maybe touch base on those. The third major question is the city able to provide the assistance being requested? Ability to provide. So we look at things then like, what's the current tax rate? You know, are people saying they're paying too much? Because again, as Ashley has talked about in the budget process, it's the constituents' money that we're using to help create a community here. So is the city able? So we would look at raising taxes. We would look at grants. We would look at
cash on hand, or do we have a TID established which could support the development, as is the case with Panorama?
Right. So we look at the different financial tools that would be available to us, and that's a whole nother set of work that the administrator and myself and the clerk, the treasurer, have to work through. So that's able to provide assistance. The fourth question is, should the city provide the assistance? Completely different question again. Whether you're able and what you should do are two different things. You know, let's use another household example. I might be able in my family to go out and buy a brand new Ram truck, but I'm not sure that my family would necessarily agree that I should do that. You know, so I can hope though, right?
Right.
So is the city able, or should the city? Two different questions. So I think we could go a little bit further into should the city provide assistance in the set of things that we look at there. And I'd pass to Ashley. We'll maybe trade off on there's four internal questions there on should the city provide assistance.
Okay.
Yeah, so the first thing would be to consider and determine if there's a public purpose. So does the proposed development serve a broad public purpose? Because we don't want to be pursuing something that only a few or some have access to or could benefit from. We want to make sure that we're looking at this really broadly and holistically and making sure it's a benefit to the entire community. So we have to meet that threshold. We should be considering, can we promote public health, safety, welfare, that sort of thing? Is it, you know, helping with our infrastructure? Does it provide other, you know, educational or social benefits? So that's the very first one that we have to walk through and make sure that whatever it is meets that standard. And then next, we would be looking at the but for test. So if but for the city's involvement, would this project not happen? So if we've established there's a public benefit, and then we get to the next one and we determine but for city involvement, this would not occur, then we can go into the next section, which would be about undue enrichment. And this is something that, you know, we've used outside financial firms to help us consider projects and determine whether or not a financial incentive or a package that the city provided would create an undue enrichment. Rather than relying on maybe subjective measures, we're trying to be as objective as possible and involving a neutral third party in that process. And then, you know, lastly, are we creating a precedent? Are we creating a situation where we're doing something that we would be comfortable repeating in the future? Is it a good practice, or is it a one-off where we don't want to do this again? So we have to be very cognizant when we're making these decisions about the future impact, not only the present, but the future impact.
I understand. So you don't want to act like you're showing favoritism. Okay, we helped out this business, but we can't help this business, right?
Precisely.
Yeah. It's a real feeling again, and so it's not uncommon that we will hear that concern. You know, I think in the last week in different venues that I've been in, I probably heard that question from three or four different parties in my role. It's like, well, why does it appear that this individual gets this type of treatment and we get this type of treatment? It's a very fair question, you know. So I'm not upset about receiving the question, but it is a question that we need to put before the decision makers and say, hey, look, this, whatever we do here, because we're investing constituents' money, in other words, it's every landowner's money that, again, that we're using in the city of Richland Center, does it benefit them broadly? Because and fairly, equitably, right? And we do the best that we can to make sure that whether it's ordinance enforcement or whether it's coming up with a development incentive, that we're factoring the same set of questions and we're being and as fair as possible. So, you know, back to the public purpose, which was the number one question in that subset of should the city provide assistance, there is actually no direct state statute that says this is the public purpose doctrine. However, there is, that's been kind of established through a series of Wisconsin Supreme Court decisions where they actually have reviewed municipalities' decision making, and they've said, well, how in the world did you get to the place where this one corporation is receiving all of this benefit and we're not? You know, the Supreme Court has said, in some cases, well, we don't see it, and we don't think it's necessarily representative of all your constituents. So that's where that one comes from. It's from Wisconsin Supreme Court, you know, cases. So the but-for test that we're talking about, Ashley mentioned consultants, that question is coming through tax incremental financing or tax incremental districts, which is a tool that's established by the state where the city can capture 100% of new tax revenue to use in development. But we've got to make sure, again, that we don't have a developer coming and going, hey, you know, I could do this all by myself, but it sure would be nice if I made 20% return on this project instead of 15%. So you have to give me this because I can see you need it in the, and you know, somebody says you need it. But again, we've said in one of our preliminary questions, well, is that a felt need or a real need, right? So we do an analysis. We look at what range is reasonable for return on the type of investment. So that's what we did for Panorama. If apartments are here, what range is reasonable? And if we find that the developer is unable to receive a reasonable return, and we can determine that it's for a public purpose. In other words, we know that our constituents have said there's no housing. That's been a perceived need. We know that it's felt, and we know that it's real. And then we've looked at, so that kind of fulfills the public purpose. Then we look at the but for. The developers come, he's shared all of his data. Well, not all, but a substantial amount of his data regarding Panorama Building 2 and 3. Like how much it costs to do this, how much more operating costs, what we expect return, what are rents, all of these things, how much are taxes, how much is insurance. All of that is going into an analysis to say, yeah, well, when you get to the end of the day, you're getting 1% return on your money. Well, who wants to take an $18 million risk for 1% return? That's not good business. So in that case, we can determine, but for the city's participation, for something that will benefit the entire public, we need to, you know, we need to be there because without it, it wouldn't happen. And then the undue enrichment is mixed in there with the but for, but the undue enrichment, again, is what's reasonable return? Is reasonable return in housing, you know, a 10 to, I think they use roughly 10 to 20. So it's a range, but if it's in that range, after you're done incentivizing, that's the goal. Not to say after we're done incentivizing, they make 30%. That's not what anybody makes in apartment housing, you know. So, and then the precedent being set is, again, kind of a mix of all those. So that's a little bit how we move through that and how, as professional staff for the city, we feel responsible to assist the decision makers in coming to a place where what we do is good and excellent. And the other thing, Ashley, reduces risk, right? Mm-hmm. And liability. So I know that's something Ashley probably looks more at than I do, is the risk and the liability of things. But again, the Supreme Court has had some of these cases. We don't want to be there. We don't want to be one of those.
I hear you. Those of us out, you know, in the public, you know, it's easy to say, well, you know, get us a grocery store or whatever the case might be. There are a lot of hoops to jump through. It would be rare to have a developer just say, you know, I don't want anything. I'm going to pay the whole freight, right?
Today, that would be rare, and it's not something that we're experiencing. So now more than ever, Jason is being contacted, the city's being contacted by developers that want to come here or want to develop in the city, and it's just not possible. You know, just like with our budget, we're fighting, you know, we're fighting inflation, we're fighting all of these rising costs, and our tax revenue doesn't increase to match it. And so it's very challenging. And so developers are facing the same things. And so there is more demand and need for city involvement than probably ever before. But thankfully, you know, of all of the constraints that we're under, we have been given the tool of using TIDs. And so that really, the tax incremental districts really give us the ability to provide incentives when deemed appropriate and justified at a low risk. And so, as we've mentioned several times, Panorama is a result of having a TID in place. And so we were able to provide an incentive based off of the new tax revenue tax increment that Panorama itself is generating. So rather than spreading that burden across the entire city on all taxpayers, it's solely what is in that TID that has been newly created. And so that is a powerful, powerful tool that we have available to us that make things possible.
Interesting. Good stuff here. We'll come back and talk a little bit more on our morning show. Time to take a break, but we have Jason Glassbrenner in the studio with us, Economic Development Director for the City of Richland Center, and Ashley Oliphant, City Administrator. We'll have more in just a moment. Our morning show continues in WRCO. Jason Glassbrenner is in with us and Ashley Oliphant talking about a business in the city of Richland Center and some things that we wanted to kind of touch base on today, including, Ashley, city revitalization. Can you give us kind of an update and a rundown on what that is?
So the city revaluation, this has been something that has been needed for some time now. It's been talked about. We certainly included it in the budget. A revaluation is something that we are required to do it. And the purpose really is to make sure that the assessed value of properties are closer to the fair market value. And that way there's an equitable taxation for everyone. It's not to increase property taxes. It's not to increase the burden that everybody feels, but it's to ensure that we're accurately assessing what exists. And so one of the mechanisms that we have in place, that every municipality has in place, to make sure that we're not getting too far out of alignment or too far off throughout the time in between revaluations, is through zoning. So when folks pull a permit, they're able to provide the information necessary for the assessor to capture improvements. So if I were to, say, remodel my kitchen or build a new garage, there's an increase in value to my property. And so the property taxes should reflect that increased value. If I don't pull a permit, then the assessor has no way of knowing what that improvement is. And so then I'm not paying my fair share of property taxes, but somebody else might be paying it instead. And so we want to make sure that we maintain as accurate assessment or assessment values as possible. So a revaluation will go through the entire city and evaluate all properties, what structures are there right now, and capture the value of those structures and land, of course. And so when we do that, it's kind of resetting. We're resetting. The size of our pie doesn't necessarily change, but the size of our individual slices of pie, that does change. So for some folks, after a revaluation, their property taxes might not change. They may even decrease because the mill rate may be adjusted, even though your assessed value could go up because of a mill rate adjustment to get that equalization, your taxes could stay the same or even decrease. If your assessed value is higher than the average assessed value, then you're likely going to see an increase. But again, the point of it is to have equitable taxation, not to just increase taxation.
I see. How often do you assess or reassess? Or, I mean, has it been a while?
It has been a while. Usually you should be doing it between every 5 to 10 years.
Okay. So it's better for all of us then, isn't it?
Absolutely. Okay. Sure. Absolutely. Yep.
So that's coming up. Anything you'd like to add, Jason?
No, I mean, I think that there's a lot of public intrepidation about when you move into a revaluation because the public thinks that revaluation means automatic tax increase. And that's, while that will occur for some individuals, it's not because, like, as a whole, taxes increased. Again, Ashley said the pie. What we mean by the pie is the exact amount that the city collects cannot change in a revaluation. But it redistributes who pays it based on what value their property currently has, not what it was 8 years ago when our last revaluation was, because maybe that person, and Ashley mentioned building permits and zoning permits and stuff like that. Maybe I took my $150,000 home and put $100,000 into it. But it didn't necessarily, it should get caught going through a permit process, but maybe it didn't. And so now I've got a home that's valued more than the other homes in my neighborhood, but I'm still paying a tax rate that is at the same or maybe even lower than my neighbor. Well, that's not equal distribution of taxation. So that's an example of why we need to make sure, and we do that with normally through a consulting service, right, Ashley?
Correct. So the city will be publishing a request for proposals, so seeking that professional firm to conduct the revaluation. And I'll add, right, the pie, it's the same size. But when we do have improvements, that's what, when you hear net new construction, so that's, new buildings, that's improving current structures, that's how the pie does increase. increase. And so there is, it's not certain that our pie will stay the exact same. It just depends on how far off we might be right now in capturing improvements that have been made over time. But the only way taxes increase, or that we're allowed to levy more taxes, is through net new construction. And that's the rule of the state, and that's a huge limiting factor, right? When we talked about combating inflation and the changes that we're experiencing, it's because we can't just assess or levy what we would like. We're limited and controlled by net new construction.
Can you give us an update on Jefferson School and that project?
Yeah, I'd love to. But before we go there, there was one more thing I wanted to say on our decision-making tree that I think was important. And so, again, just to leave the listeners with the four questions again. Do your constituents want the development? Is the development needed? Is the city able to provide assistance? Should the city provide assistance? So under the question of is the development needed? Again, we're not talking about felt need, but we're talking about real need. So what the decision makers have to do in that particular case is ask the question, is there a lack of the type of development that we're talking about? Is there a real lack? Is there a real broad-based public need for this? Not, again, do I feel or I wish I had another choice. You know, the 10 choices that are here aren't enough. I want the 11th. That would not be appropriate for the decision makers to say, yeah, I know the constituents are, really after us for 11th choice, but when we participate with city and taxpayer dollars by incentivizing the 11th, we're competing with the 10. That's not necessarily, in my belief, the role of government or my office, economic development. I'm trying to fill in where there's need and there's real need and there's real gap, and that our community is struggling or perhaps you could say suffering. I don't like that term. I think we're doing pretty good in Richland Center, but that's the type of, at the core of the decision making process, our decision makers really have to say, is there a lack of that development here? Because if there's not, then our promotion of one versus all of the other is basically the city choosing to compete. And we haven't been instructed. I don't know if Ashley's been instructed, but we haven't been instructed in any way, shape, or form that that's our role. So that I'm aware of, Ashley?
No.
Okay. So the other thing in the is something needed? Is the development needed? It's important not to just say, well, it increases tax and, we don't have that item. It's important to look at what I call, or someone else has referred to, and I picked up, I kind of like the term, but it's called tangential, off to the side, tangential economic benefits. So when we're moving through a decision-making process with the team, we're saying, not just do we want it or is it needed, but what jobs are created? What level jobs are created? What types of jobs are created? Is there insurance with the jobs? Is there retirement funding with the jobs? Are the jobs family friendly, or are they, is there a particular demographic that the job is most likely to attract? Does the development being proposed bring a national name brand name to our community, which could help draw customers from around the area into Richland Center to make our business environment healthier? Do we have a positive growth image? So, I think in the past, probably all of us have said, darn, I wish more would happen in Richland Center. Well, as we do these things, the decision makers, get pro-business or pro-development, we're actually benefiting from a positive growth image. Something good is happening in Richland Center, something positive. We have to look at destination shopping, for example. So if we incentivize or we promote this business, what other destination shopping events take place? So they don't just go to place X, but they go to A, B, C, D, so that's destination type of shopping type of questions. And then, of course, we've talked about this quite a bit, but increased sales tax revenue. No, we've talked about property tax, but increased sales tax is another one. So if it's a store that's a retail store, right, there's a 5.5% sales tax that the county is receiving the benefit of. You bring in a, you know, multi-million dollar business into town, then the county benefits from the sales tax generated, and that's not only coming from the constituents that live here, but again, all the people that visit Richland Center. And the final thing in kind of the is it needed is, has the development been identified by decision makers as a strategic long-term goal, right? So we can really get, what's the term when you feel like you're shaken and you like there's no focus and like you're just like, oh my gosh, where's our focus here? Well, it's important that the decision makers, through the comprehensive plan which we've worked on, you know, through different goals of planning commission or the redevelopment authority, that those goals are clearly understood and the decision makers say, hey, Jason, Ashley, these are our top three goals. Because we get all sorts of requests on all sorts of things, and there's no way we can cover them all. So has the request that's currently before us been identified by decision makers as an important strategic goal for the health of our community? So I just wanted to cover that one. I think it's important, but I think that gives you a pretty good outline of what Ashley and I try to do when we're in a meeting, when we're bringing a whole bunch of data, whether it's from, you know, the Office of Finance, or, you know, whether it's me talking about tangential economic benefits, we're like, okay, this is the entire picture. Are we making a good decision?
Yeah, it's one thing to balance your own account, which I struggle with, but now when you're dealing with other people's money and the taxes and things like that, man, there's a lot of responsibilities. So yeah. I ask about Jefferson School. Anything new on that project or the rezoning?
So, the city council did approve the rezoning of the Jefferson School in downtown Richland Center. And I believe that was a condition of the sale of the school to another private individual. So it'd go from the Richland School District to a private individual. And the private individual came and said, hey, the way that this works is if we can get it rezoned. And so the rezoning was conducted. Our zoning department did a great job. Mark Stewart is our lead there. He worked with the customer in town, or the client, or the potential buyer, to try to move the zoning to a different spot, and landed on R5. So the council approved a rezone to R5. R5 means that you can have multiple residences there, but in the permitted, it's primarily residential, but under conditional, which you can apply for, you could have different types of businesses and maybe offices or things like that. So it allows a good mixed use category for the new landowner, as long as that transaction closes, which I'm not aware of the details of that, but I know that rezoning was a condition and we got that done.
Okay. Ashley, cemetery project. I was going to ask you about that too. Anything new on that front?
Yes. Thank you for asking. I think this is a very exciting project that the City Council just approved at their last meeting. So the City Council authorized contracting with Southwest Regional Planning Commission on the development of an online GIS map for our cemeteries. And so, much like you can see if you go on Richland County's website and look at their property records, they have parcel maps for the entire city and the entire state, really. But this would be creating something similar to that for our cemeteries, which will help people in locating their loved ones or viewing available plots for purchase. It's also going to be a repository for information. So we'll be able, on an online map available to the public as well as internally, have information such as, you know, who's buried in that location, were they a veteran? And if so, what branch? When did they serve? We'll also be uploading obituaries, if we have them, and potentially even pictures of gravestones. So with the Richland Cemetery in particular, that one is very large, and it's not laid out in neat and tidy north-south rows. It's not perfect like that. So it can be a little bit challenging to find exactly where things are, and so this should really aid in that, potentially with the incorporation of even GPS coordinates. So that way, if someone's really confused, they'll be able to enter that data in. And so it's very, very, very exciting, and there's likely going to be an opportunity for public involvement. So if anybody is interested or would like to be part of that project, I would say keep your ears open, because we'll be seeking help and getting all of the data necessary to incorporate into that GIS map. And we will begin the project in June, and it will be done by the end of the year.
I know there are some street projects coming up. People should listen and watch for more information on that as
well. Yeah, we'll have notice of public meetings posted on our website and certainly on the radio as well. So yes, keep your ears open for those dates.
Is Richland Center unique? Your city manager position, is it kind of unique with what you do, or are you similar to other towns this size?
For my role, I think it's common now, not always, but I think Richland Center itself is very unique. You know, we often hear, I think you touched on it earlier, Jason, like, I wish we had this or we don't have that. I think there are so many amenities right here in Richland Center that maybe if we're accustomed to having them, we don't always recognize them. In fact, my husband and I were just taking our kids roller skating recently, and we were sitting in the roller rink going, well, we had this when we were kids, but this doesn't exist in places anymore. How lucky are we that we get to share this experience with our children? And it's just small things like that we still have here. We've got an outdoor movie theater, an indoor one, a roller rink, like I said. So there's so many things here that if we just take a step back and recognize that and take advantage of it, we're very fortunate.
We're fortunate to have both of you in the studio today. Thanks for your expertise and your insight here today.
Thanks for having us, Phil.
Good to have you. We'll talk to you again real soon. Jason Glassbrenner, Economic Development Director, City of Richland Center. Also joining us today, City Administrator Ashley Oliphant on The Morning Show.